This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Okay, everybody. Welcome to the International Press Conference for Charlie Wilson's War.
Yay! Yay!
As the war observers amongst you may have noticed, we are joined here today by Mr. Mike Nichols. Mr. Philip Seymour Hoffman. The wonderful Julia Roberts.
Oh.
And yes, I'm grateful, Tom Hanks.
That's right. Thank you for that gracious 4 o'clock in the afternoon applause.
Couldn't be less interested.
Okay, folks, you know how this works. Put your hands up, the mic will come to you. Just do make sure you please give the mic back ASAP. Before we start, I'd like to ask a quick question. I'd like to ask Mr. Nichols, how do you think Charlie would have fared in the modern political climate? Because one senses that newspaper reporters today may have been quite tenacious in exposing his lifestyle.
Oh, I think Charlie would have been fine at any time in history because he does something that you don't see very much in politics. He tells the truth, and he tells the truth about himself. And I think there are very few times in history, including even now, in which, for no other reason than it's so disarming, that when a politician is the first to attack himself, Charlie's always done that.
And Tom, knowing the nature of some of your countrymen, do you think that after the film's release, some editorials may be blaming Charlie for 9/11?
I can guarantee that there will be any number of editorials or pieces that are going to be written in the blogosphere, on web spaces, and actually old-fashioned newspapers that you hold that will say, blatantly, were it not for Charlie Wilson, there would not have been a 9/11. And in fact, there might be even some people in this room who are already composing that very, very piece. Now, that's their job. Their job is to make things easy. Their job is to find simple targets. Their job is to point out the most obvious villains. Whether there's any authenticity to it or not, doesn't matter. They'll go ahead and do it. And it will be specious, and it will be incorrect, and it will be wrong, but it'll be good copy. You know, it'll be a fascinating thing. If they want to study history a little bit more, they could go back to almost any one of the chapters in Western society's involvement with that part of the world, be it Winston Churchill drawing a line on a map, or Lawrence of Arabia discovering aspects of what it's like to live amongst the peoples of the desert, or they can go back to when a little piece of sperm went up a fallopian tube to find an egg, and out was fertilized Osama bin Laden. They can do anything they want to. Whether or not they're going to be completely accurate or not is not really going to matter to them.
Okay, that's it. Will you please just refer all your questions to Mr. Hanson?
I second that.
I'm drinking from the cup of knowledge. You can answer this.
Well, certainly enough of my trivial questions. Who'd like to kick us off on the floor? Fine lady here.
Okay, Barbara Gassensland in Austria, and I would like to address the question to Tom. First, let me say I like the two Wilson movies that you have done now. In the political notice, what do you expect from the upcoming election, from the new president, in regards to the war as well, and who are you going to favor?
Well, I have already voted. On the first Tuesday of November, I went down to my local polling place. I paid attention to the final, last 19 months of campaign. I paid attention to the Republican candidates, all 42 of them. I weighed 32 Democratic candidates, and I made my choice. Now, the polling place wasn't open for some reason. On the first Tuesday of November, there was no flag. There were no ladies handing out cookies. There are no ballot boxes, so I just wrote Chris Dodd on a piece of paper and shoved it under the door. And so therefore, I have voted for Christopher Dodd already, because I believe he has Big Mo on his side, and he will lead America as well as any gray-haired man with a full head of hair possibly can. So I have voted. Thank you very much. And I believe Chris Dodd has already been sworn in as President of the United States. And already, airports and railroads are being built where there never were airports and railroads, thanks to President Chris Dodd. It's 4 o'clock.
I'm good.
I believe that is exactly the answer the lady was asking.
Next question, please.
If I can ask you, hi, my name is Nina Reifel.
We sort of hear you.
Good. I work for Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung in Germany, and I would like to know, Mr. Hanks, when you first optioned the book with Mr. Gretzmann, what captured your imagination? Maybe all of you on the podium can answer this question. What this story is all about for you then?
Well, I've spoken. I have so much material. I don't.
Should we put Mr. Hoffman on this ball?
No, you shouldn't. this life. I was saying earlier today, and I'll stick with it. That the thing that got me in from when I was reading the book, and also this ultimately the screenplay, was that I was taking in these characters whose liabilities became their assets, and that's how I see it. That your liabilities in certain circumstances would actually become your assets in another, and that there would be somebody that actually wore their liabilities on their sleeves, moved me, and that's how things get done intrigued me. And I think that's very true. I think that's how things get done. That the flawed part, sometimes a screwed up, weird, troublesome part of a person, is the thing that ultimately drives them through something that most people would run from. And that your liability could be your assets and vice versa. That's the thing that really touched me about the story.
Can the others answer quickly? I'm sorry.
No, that's it.
Well, I can just say very quickly that one of the, I think what Phil is brilliant and true, and it's certainly what drew all of us, and is what finally draws you to most drama, which is that it's the unexpected things about people. And in fact, in life even, the unexpected things that seem to be drawbacks that are somehow transformed into their better qualities. But I also think that now, more possibly than any time in history except the people around Marie Antoinette, is it true that everybody is just sitting around not doing anything much about what's happening except forming more opinions and expressing them endlessly to each other? All of us are doing that. That to see something in which someone unarguably made a difference. To bring down the Soviet Union is definitely making a difference. It's not open to interpretation. Of course, they didn't do it alone. Nobody's really claiming that. It's not that at all. It's that it's a concatenation of events. It's happening in Czechoslovakia, it's happening in Berlin, and it's happening all over the world, and they had a large part to do with it. Wouldn't it be nice to say that about just anything now?
Julia, do you have a comment on this?
I don't.
She's cold. She's cold.
Next question. This gentleman here, and then this lady in the front.
Mr. Nichols, I'm actually from Czech Republic, and I spent 10 years of my life under Soviet rule. But still, the film, the story of it, like cutting across the traditional division between good and evil, I thought it kind of unfair that the Soviets were portrayed as the evil incarnate. Was it for the story to be more understandable, or like, did you feel like making some subtleties about the Soviets?
I have an unreasoning prejudice against any leader who kills and is responsible for the death of 50 million people. I'm just funny that way.
Hi, Mike from Germany.
Can you talk a little bit about each of you, how you were inspired by Charlie Wilson, and which way do you feel you can make a difference in today's world?
Well, the thing that's most impressive about Charlie Wilson is his lack of hypocrisy. Quite frankly, I wish he was in Congress today. And if he was running, I would vote for a guy who is as free of his hypocrisy as Charlie Wilson. I had asked him, like, how did you keep winning these elections? I mean, you did drugs, you drank, you chased women, you were a notorious drunk, womanizer. And he came from that county, by the way, in which drinking is illegal. He comes from a dry county. They don't even sell alcohol in the county from Lufkin, Texas. How did he win? And he said, well, because I never lied about my behavior. He never pretended to be something that he wasn't. That's a hard thing to do. You have to be a man of a certain type of character in order to live your life that way. But he did, and I can say that although I am nothing at all like Charlie Wilson in so many ways, I'd like to be like Charlie Wilson with that character trait.
How can you make a difference?
Well, you can make a difference by coming to a conclusion of what is right and what is wrong, and never wavering from that, and supporting it every chance you get. And doubling it. Double it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, yeah, they show the power of the individual in a way that is inspiring in everyday life. And I think, as I had said earlier, you were there just talking about, you know, everybody has to do what's appropriate to their life and where their compassion is. And for me, I have a home life, I have a family, and so the differences that we try to make are primarily local and environmental, and you know, we compost and do tiny little things that hopefully will raise our tiny people into big people with bigger ideas and stronger convictions and a wider scope than the home where they started. So that's what we do. What do you do, Philip?
I was trying to think what the question was again. I'm so sorry.
Do you compost? It's a simple question.
Do I compost? Oh, yes, I do. Oh, compost. Of course I do. I just did right now. Anyone? Anyone? It's
very... Don't get so loud.
One. Just give me one.
Are you inspired by Charlie?
Charlie Wilson.
What Tom said, and I'm not saying that to be a joke. I think he's right. He's one of the most disarming guys that you'll meet, and he's as my friend Bennett says, he's a great hang. You can just hang out with the guy and talk about anything, and he's incredibly intelligent, and he'll be very honest about how he feels about it, and you'll get his opinion, and he'll be able to discuss your opinion, and it'll be okay. And you see, like I said, that I would. Someone asked me that earlier today. Would you vote for him? And if he was running today, I would, because I would like that. That I would. It would make me feel good that someone like that was in the House there. So yeah.
Hi, I'm Kirti from Finland, and this question is for Mr. Hoffman. Do you have any Finnish or Helsinki connections?
I could. I love working the mic. I don't know, but you know what? Maybe. I mean, look at me. Maybe. Why do you ask? Is there something that you know that I don't?
Well, she's your sister.
Basically, because there's a line about you.
Oh, yes.
Helsinki, and you were supposedly studying
yes.
Finnish. So did you actually ever manage, or did they make you study Finnish?
No.
As preparation,
no, gosh. No. No. But it's a good line.
The movie actors Wilson saying America has good intentions, but something is going wrong at the end. What are America's intentions, according to you, towards Iraq and Afghanistan?
I didn't understand the question.
Who is that question to? Sorry.
Whoever wants.
Whoever wants
to get answered that way.
We do not know. We've been told by our leaders that we are going to bring goodness and niceness to the entire world. That's what we've been told.
You were persuaded by that?
Was I persuaded by that? Well, I think can the world have too much goodness and niceness? No, I'm in favor of that.
This gentleman in the front row.
Hi, Erica from Germany. That's for Julia and Tom. Both of you have been superstars basically for almost 2 decades now. But let's say there comes some unwanted attention. I'm wondering, how are you dealing with this? Because I guess with 20 years, there's a learning curve. You know what works and what doesn't work for you. So I'd like to know, what are you basically doing to make sure that, and what do you have to do differently from a normal person to make sure that you can keep, you know, a person private life and things?
Tom has grown accustomed to my attention to him. I don't call him late at night anymore. But he's adjusted to the attention I give him over the last 20 years very nicely.
I found that in order to maintain my average normal guy persona, as well as the health of my family, to keep the international press conferences to a minimum of 2 or 3 a year. And get to the dentist as often as possible.
Giovanna Grassi from Italy, Corriere della Sera for Julia Roberts. Can you tell us something about the fashion of your character? She's blonde, glamour, like a diva. Did you work a lot for this image? Was it your decision to be blonde and so glamour in a certain way?
Well, I think that we did everything that was physically possible for me to look as much like Joanne Herring did at this time as we could. I mean, I think that's pretty close exactly how she looked in those years with the blonde hair and very stylish, beautiful, well-presented gal. So she was our sole inspiration.
Question for all the actors, Tom, Julia, and Philip. You had played a real character, non-fictional character, and in this time as well. And what is the trick or difficulties to play the character? And two of the characters are still alive, I believe. So what is the difficulty?
Well, part of it is a little bit easier because they do dress the way they dress and they look the way they look, so you don't have to create that. You sort of have to study it and recreate it, which takes a lot of work, but that's a different discipline. I think the thing that's difficult about playing somebody who is alive is to not screw with their motivations. They had reasons for doing what they did. They had drives, and you can't just alter that willy-nilly in order to make a different movie. I think you have to find out what drove them to make the decision that they made, and I think you have to be authentic in your representation of what those motivations were, and that's not easy to do.
Well,
just adding to that, because I agree with everything Tom has ever said in his life, but just to also be
thank you, Meg.
But I think you also have to be respectful of who they are now. I mean, we are talking about something from 20 years ago, and you want to, I think, respect where they've come in those 20 years and where they reside in their minds and their hearts now, and try to be authentic to what the story is that we're telling and still respect the people that they are. If they're different, if they've changed opinions about things, if they're... motivations are different now towards politics or not. So I think it's a balance of who they were then and who they are now.
I think that I find it helpful to look at every character as if it's fiction. I don't know if that's helpful. Because ultimately it's an interpretation. I can't be the guy. I'll never be the guy. And that's something I need to let go of because I'm not the guy. And I remember an acting teacher telling me years ago saying, if you were the person, you'd be insane. And I was like, that's right. And so when the times I've played somebody that's a real person, I know that there's certain guidelines, like Tom's saying, motivations and things, but ultimately I need to let go of that, because ultimately I'm going to be interpreting what I think that person did, and it's going to be something artful. So, and that's what I do with parts of people that don't exist, if that's helpful.
It's for Tom. I heard that you have another record to add to your back-to-back Oscars, and is that you have been offered the biggest salary ever for Angels and Demons, the prequel to the Da Vinci Code, making you the highest paid actor in Hollywood history.
No, no way, really?
That's not true. I'm going to get paid money in order to do that if it actually happens, but there's no such thing as the highest paid actor. And I would be interested in that manually. The deal is a deal. That's not true.
My question was...
What am I going to do with all the money?
No. About actors receiving so high salaries. In context with the industry having problems with strikes, shutting down projects, all that's happening with the piracy.
The strike has stopped everything, and this happens every now and again. And I understand, I was told by one of the crack journalists in the room that the writers have turned down the offer that came out of the top secret negotiations. Is this true, crack show business experts? Nobody knows anything. thank you, thank you, Santa Fe. Snoring, they were just snoring over here, my crack team of show business experts. There were a lot of movies that are not going to happen that were slated to happen between now. There was kind of like, well, I don't think anything was going to be in production after June 30th anyway, in preparation for the potential Screen Actors Guild strike. What has altered now is the slates for studios that thought they were going to be able to have films in the can shooting in the spring, and that might not happen for a number of films, but I can guarantee you also that there's a bunch of people out there scrambling to get their movies made so that because the scripts are ready to go. It's going to be across the board. People are going to be affected, and it's only a matter of time before that starts trickling down to caterers and carpenters and stage medics and the guys who are responsible for running the cameras during press conferences like this. There's not going to be much going on. So that's just the way it is.
I have a question for Mr. Nichols. I think Barbara Lyon, the sister-in-law of Mr. Kreil, said that this was such an American story, and maybe you could comment on that with your background, having grown up in Berlin, or having spent the first years of your childhood in Berlin, and coming to this country. Would you agree to this statement?
I'm not sure I know what an American story is after Huck Finn. It's not that I don't think they exist. I just don't immediately know what they are. I think that just as I was sort of mulling over my much too fast and smart-ass answer about making Russia the villain, because as I've been thinking about it, I was thinking about Nobel Prize winner Czesław Miłosz, and this stunning point that he makes that all the terrible things that came with communism started in the wish for something that is better than democracy or fascism on both ends, and that the most horrible thing about what happened is that the people, the almost countless people whose lives were destroyed and who ultimately died because of it, it started with their impulse of generosity and wanting to do away with privilege and class and to do something in which people were more the same than they have been in any of these systems. And of course it was used against them in the most terrible way, and that's really sort of what I meant rather than what I said. As far as an American story is concerned, American stories started out as America did, about a search for freedom and individuality and expressing things that were new having to do with democracy and trying to deal with the inequities in everyone's lives. I don't know what an American story is now. I think it's easy to find, for instance, an East German story when you look at the great movie that I think about quite a lot, which is The Lives of Others. I think the more extreme the circumstances, the more possible for a great work of art about those circumstances. And the more inchoate and generalized and hard to pin down the circumstances, the more difficult it is to find a story. What is an American story? Can you name one? I'd like to. A Place in the Sun, I guess, was an American story at that time. It's not an American story now. I think that the uses of a democratic government as explored and employed by Charlie, yes, I think that aspect of it and that way in which, I mean, we all think of politicians as manipulative and certainly now as responding only to what is required in terms of public opinion. I think the idea of, it goes all the way back to Frank Capra and Mr. Deeds Goes to Town and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Those were American stories, and they were about one person holding out, and one person insisting on something that is inherent in the American system being the most important thing. And in that sense, I think this is a very American story because he's acting to begin with. The three of them, you could say, are acting on their own in the way that in the Frank Capra movies that happened also. And in a way that, in this case, it became a kind of example of what it means to make a difference. Whether that's possible now, we'll wait and see.
I'm afraid we only have time for one more question, so this gentleman in.
Yeah, I have a question for Tom, Julian, and Philip. As actors, you all have done political-based movies before, but also as actors, you travel the world, you experience other cultures, other political systems firsthand. So I wonder if your work over the years and the experience you had over the years had any influence on your point of view about politics these days. Have you become more interested in it? Have you become more active? Anything like that?
Who's
all of us.
Has I'm sorry.
Your work is, because you are, you do political movies, you also travel a lot, you experience basically politics firsthand to the countries where you're going. Also, you experience other cultures. So has your work over the years, all this experience you got, changed your point of your opinion about politics or politicians? Have you become more active in politics? Do you feel, because of your work, you've become more political?
I think based on the climate of the world, you're forced to stand for something or step aside at this point. How active one is, I think it's tricky as a public person, the activeness that you take in a public way. For me, personally, I find it an interesting dilemma. I mean, I consider myself an active person when it comes to my political convictions, but maybe not necessarily in an open forum, because I'm conflicted about that and what that impact really means, or what would be the point of everybody knowing everything that I stand up for, because as an actor you have to have some kind of mystery left for people to be fully convinced of you as somebody else and what they believe in and what they stand for. But I think we live in a world today where you have to be active. To be passive is to agree with all of it, and I just don't.
Well, I, it's mostly not so much about the work that I've been able to do but visiting around the world, shooting in other places. But I'm surprised at the age of 51 that you have to live your politics. Yeah, I don't think it's necessary for us as celebrities to go out to endorse it, because we end up living our politics. Look, I'm happy to pay taxes. I pay a lot of taxes. I'm glad I get to. I'm not a guy who's saying, hey, I should not have to pay this amount. Of course, I should pay more taxes than anybody else. And we do things like, I drive an electric car, and I do plenty much things. And if you were going to look at the lifestyle that I lead, by and large, you would probably assume that I'm a Democrat who votes liberal candidates for liberal cause. And it's true. I think we should have a better healthcare system than we do. Why America has the crappiest health system in the industrial world is beyond my comprehension. We're America. We should have the best. Why we have a public education system that doesn't really educate its kids the way, say, Finland does is beyond my comprehension. We should be better than Finland. No offense to Finland, but they're a fine country in every way, shape, or form. We should be raising kids that speak more than one language. We don't. We should have kids that maybe have to go to school for half a day on Saturday to do something for the community. We don't. Now, does that make me some... It makes me a guy who has political thoughts, but as far as being political active, I think I'm politically practical. I do live my life in a practical way that I guess is representative of my political choices, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go stand next to a guy in a Scooby-Doo outfit that is endorsing Chris Dodd for president of the United States. I'll let Scooby-Doo's fans make their own decisions, but I'll just live my political choices. Thank you very much.
I won't cover it all. What's interested me the most, I grew up in a political household, so I almost rebelled against it, because if that makes sense. As a kid, it was like my mom, and it was all around me, and there was something about it that I needed to rebel against. And I remember it was into my late 20s when I actually started getting involved in it again, because I could own it for myself. And I've been quite interested and quite involved in finding out about the political temperature of the time as much as possible. But that said, the traveling and the work I've done, the most fascinating thing to me about it is perceptions. I've been endlessly fascinated about one country's perception about another. It's the most interesting thing to me when I go someplace and I talk to the people there, and their perceptions of America or other countries and our perceptions of them, and how... And you just see, well, the communication is, there's so much miscommunication. The clarity of communication is so fogged up, you know, by all the politicians or the media or whatever you want to say. And that's a very fascinating thing to me. It always has been, and a very enlightening thing.
I have one last question.
So, I'm afraid we have finished. I'm not working. I'm afraid that's it, guys. So thank you to our director and cast, and we'll see you soon.